as would an explorer who drank too much.
Why is that?
The little prince asked again. Because drunkards see double, and the geographer would write down two mountains where there was only one.
I know someone, said the little prince, who would be a bad explorer.
Possibly. Well, when the explorer's moral character seems to be a good one, an investigation is made into his discovery.
By going to see it?
No, that would be too complicated. But the explorer is required to furnish proofs. For instance, if he claims to have discovered a large mountain, he is required to bring back large stones from it.
The geographer suddenly grew excited.
But you come from far away. You're an explorer. You must describe your planet for me.
And the geographer, having opened his logbook, sharpened his pencil. Explorers' reports are first recorded in pencil. Ink is used only after proofs have been furnished.
Well, said the geographer expectantly.
Oh, where I live, said the little prince, is not very interesting. It's so small. I have three volcanoes, two active and one extinct. But you never know.
You never know, said the geographer.
I also have a flower.
We don't record flowers, the geographer said.
Why not? It's the prettiest thing.
Because flowers are ephemeral.
What does ephemeral mean?
Geographies, said the geographer, are the finest books of all. They never go out of fashion. It is extremely rare for a mountain to change position. It is extremely rare for an ocean to be drained of its water. We write eternal things.
But extinct volcanoes can come back to life, the little prince interrupted. What does ephemeral mean?
Whether volcanoes are extinct or active comes down to the same thing for us, said the geographer. For us, what counts is the mountain. That doesn't change.
But what does ephemeral mean?
Repeated the little prince, who had never in all his life let go of a question once he had asked it.
It means what is threatened by imminent disappearance.
Is my flower threatened by imminent disappearance?
Of course.
My flower is ephemeral,
the little prince said to himself.
And she has only four thorns with which to defend herself against the world. And I've left her all alone where I live.
That was his first impulse of regret. But he plucked up his courage again.
Where would you advise me to visit?
He asked.
The planet Earth, the geographer answered. It has a good reputation.
And the little prince went on his way, thinking about his flower. Chapter 16. The seventh planet, then, was the Earth.
The Earth is not just another planet. It contains 111 kings, including, of course, the African kings, 7,000 geographers, 900,000 businessmen, 7.5 million drunkards, 311 million vain men. In other words, about 2 billion grown-ups. To give you a notion of the Earth's dimensions, I can tell you that before the invention of electricity, it was necessary to maintain, over the whole of six continents, a veritable army of 462,511 lamplighters. Seen from some distance, this made a splendid effect. The movements of this army were ordered like those of a ballet. First came the turn of the lamplighters of New Zealand and Australia. Then these, having lit their street lamps, would go home to sleep. Next, it would be the turn of the lamplighters of China and Siberia to perform their steps in the lamplighters' ballet. And then they too would vanish into the wings. Then came the turn of the lamplighters of Russia and India. Then those of Africa and Europe. Then those of South America and of North America.
and they never missed their cues for their appearances on stage. It was awe-inspiring. Only the lamplighter of the single street lamp at the North Pole and his colleague of the single street lamp at the South Pole led carefree, idle lives. They worked twice a year. Chapter 17. Trying to be witty leads to lying, more or less. What I just told you about the lamplighters isn't completely true, and I risk giving a false idea of our planet to those who don't know it. Men occupy very little space on Earth. If the 2 billion inhabitants of the globe were to stand close together, as they might for some big public event, they would easily fit into a city block that was 20 miles long and 20 miles wide. You could crowd all humanity onto the smallest Pacific islet. Grown-ups, of course, won't believe you. They're convinced they take up much more room. They consider themselves as important as the baobabs. So you should advise them to make their own calculations. They love numbers, and they'll enjoy it. But don't waste your time on this extra task. It's unnecessary. Trust me. So once he reached Earth, the little prince was quite surprised not to see anyone. He was beginning to fear he had come to the wrong planet, when a moon-coloured loop uncoiled on the sand. "Good evening," the little prince said, just in case.
"Good evening," said the snake.
"What planet have I landed on?" asked the little prince.
"On the planet Earth, in Africa," the snake replied.
"Ah, and are there no people on Earth?"
"It's the desert here. There are no people in the desert. Earth is very big," said the snake.
The little prince sat down on a rock and looked up into the sky.
"I wonder," he said, "if the stars are lit up so that each of us can find his own some day. Look at my planet. It's just overhead, but so far away."
"It's lovely," the snake said.
"What have you come to Earth for?"
"I'm having difficulties with a flower," the little prince said.
"Ah," said the snake, and they were both silent.
"Where are the people?"
The little prince finally resumed the conversation.
"It's a little lonely in the desert."
"It's also lonely with people,"